Coaches, welcome to the Daily Sports Locker Room Podcast. We're back again to start our championship look at things. We've got Ryan Jones back with us today. Ryan, very welcome. Great to see you back. And Dan St. Ledger. Mark Thorne's also going to be joining us, coaches, as well, later in the pod. To chat about Wicklow's fantastic win over Westmead yesterday. So we'll hold fire on chatting about that until Mark's on board. But lads, Ulster Derby, Ryan, I suppose, Ulster Championship, there's a lot of talk about provincials, a lot of talk about Leinster being dead. And, you know, I know some of the results yesterday, obviously, you know, particularly the Wicklow result, but a lot of counties do still value the Leinster Championship. And I suppose every county, Ryan, values a championship win, you know, in the old structure and the old way of things. I suppose a championship win was a massive thing for a county, but Ulster sort of never seems to let you down regarding the quality, the excitement, you know, and the intensity of the matches. And Monaghan Cavan, Ryan, delivered a really, really enthralling game yesterday.
Listen, Stephen, like people were saying that the crowds and stuff were going to be down in these championship matches, but I think there's maybe 8,500 in Clovis yesterday, which is still a very good crowd for a first round, preliminary round game. Cavan Monaghan obviously is a local derby, and Cavan are great at coming in under the radar. I always find you can't really go by their league form. They can always still take a scalp, and they were very poor against Armagh in the second last game. I seen them against Armagh in the last league game, and you probably would have thought there was going to be a reaction because they're only 2 weeks out from championship, but they were really poor in that game too. And then yesterday they go and they beat a Monaghan team that probably aren't the Monaghan team of 3 or 4 years ago, but still, that was a massive massive result for Cavan. So I've no doubt now they're going to be playing Tyrone in their own ground in Breffni in 2 weeks' time, and they'll definitely fancy their chances there. And Cavan are a very passionate county, so it's great for them. You know, the Ulster Championship is really kicked off with that massive win yesterday.
Yeah, and a bad year, Ledge, for Monaghan. You know, obviously relegated from Division 1. We've talked about Monaghan. I think Monaghan Pip, probably Monaghan Folk, Daniel, probably felt a bit of a patronisation about, you know, oh, plucky Monaghan, and Monaghan survive again. And they probably felt, you know, that they were maybe disrespected over the last couple of years. But certainly this year, Ledge, it sort of seems to be that golden era, golden generation, and obviously maybe our thoughts go out to Darren Hughes as well, who picked up what looks like a severe leg break yesterday. Please God, he recovers well. Like, Darren's been an unbelievable servant. I think Vinnie Corey mentioned 18 seasons, Ledge. But I think those type of warriors and players that have led the charge for so long are maybe just, Daniel, the legs are just starting to go a wee bit. And I would say that's probably catching up with them, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'd echo those sentiments with Darren Hughes, because it looked like a really nasty collision, but we'll send him our best. But yeah, I think so. I'd say there's a need for a rebuild one way or the other. I think probably staying in Division 1 was fantastic for as long as they did, but it was probably maybe papering over cracks here and there, and even Began not being around and McManus not playing much Division 1 this year. That was probably the difference with them staying up and not staying up. There is a rebuild needed, and in fairness, I think Division 2 is the place to start it for them. Like last year, they kind of eked out a lot of games as well. I remember them playing Kildare and Tullamore, where it was a really slow, methodical game, and they managed to get a result. It was an extra time, I think, wasn't it? Or Conor McCarthy got a score to win it close to the death. But yesterday was a similar kind of game. They were eking and eking and eking, and they nearly did it, but they played really... I thought they played into Cavan's hands an awful lot, but I think a rebuild is probably no harm for Monaghan, and it's probably started already, but it probably has to... Yeah, they nearly have to go full throttle at it. Like, you know, how many more years has McManus left? You know, Darren Hughes probably now in the same boat. I'd say eventually you'll start to see a whole new breed of Monaghan players starting to take a bit of ownership. And sometimes you have to not get rid, but when the older fellas do, sometimes younger fellas step into the breach a little bit more. But listen, I thought Cavan were full value for their victory. And to be fair, like we talked last week about, you know, Derry and Dublin, the new way. Well, Cavan went back to the old way, and they were very methodical. They were pragmatic. I thought the first half really set them up for it, because they didn't go chasing the game. They picked and choose when to go after kickouts. And yeah, full value for it.
Yeah, and Ryan, I suppose like you look at the way Cavan played. I remember reading the piece from Kildare, the Kildare National, when they played Kildare in the National League. The Kildare were very, I suppose the reporters in Kildare and supporters in Kildare were very frustrated in the way Kildare had played. Cavan had sat in with a deep block, Ryan, that protected their scoring zone. they were picking Kildare off. And then on top of that as well, Ryan, and you know yourself, every team needs a really good place kicker. And like Paddy Lynch yesterday finished 1-9, 7 free kicks, like very reliable. When you get those chances, if you are sitting in deep, Ryan, from a coaching perspective, when you do get those opportunities, whether it's from place balls or open play, you really need to capitalize on them, don't you? Like,
yeah, Paddy Lynch has been in phenomenal form for Cavan throughout the league, even though, you know, the last two games were poor from their point of view. Lynch was still firing big scores. Now, in saying that, against Fermanagh, they left oceans of space. So obviously they realised that, you know, moving forward, this wasn't going to be the template they were going to use going into the championship. I thought they were very well structured. Get the ball to Lynch. In fairness, he has probably now been the main marksman since Grove McKernan is no longer there. Like, you even seen Lynch kicking frees from the other side, which is more a left footer. But I think Cavan, like, in fairness to them, they've lost Thomas Galligan, they've lost Grove McKernan. Jason McLaughlin is a really good man marker for them. He wasn't playing. Raymond Galligan himself was obviously, you know, the main leader within that team from goals. And for them to still be able to compete well in Division 2, put in a big performance yesterday and turn over Monaghan, like, you have to credit them. And it just shows you probably the depth that there is there within Cavan in general. You know, the club scene is probably very strong as well. We've seen Gowna have, you know, been coming very strong as well. So I feel when you're Paddy Lynch and you have a guy that can score 9, 10, 11 points any game, you always have a chance.
Yeah. And Ledge, I seen them playing in the McKenna Cup. I know it was only the McKenna Cup, but I seen them playing against Down. I was wild impressed, Ledge, with them. In particular that night as well, Brady was really impressive at centre half forward. The man for me, though, like, and I remember going back to a game Down played against them. I think Down were 9 points up, I think, at half time. Paddy Talley was over Down at the time. And it was a game in Clonus or in the Athletic Grounds. It was a wild, wet, rainy day, boy. And in the second half, Ledge, I'll never forget Paddy Faulkner. There was a kick out to be won. It was hanging in the air. He came from nowhere, just like a real warrior, through a crowd of players, won a ball, and just put down in the back foot straight away after the whistle. Cavan came back and won that game by 3. It was a complete collapse. But it was just that doggedness, that real determination. And like, Ledge, you can talk about Paddy Lynch and Brady and nice forwards, like, but you need those characters in your team as well. Like, and by all accounts, Faulkner was unbelievable yesterday.
Yeah, really, really good. And he was playing a little bit further out the field. He used to play fullback an awful lot, and I remember marking him when I was coming to close to the end. I was playing an old pivot inside full forward, and he's got pace, he's got power, and as we saw yesterday, he's got a finish. Now, I know he played for his club inside a little bit as well, and you could see the way he used his body to shield the defender away. Really, really good finish. But outside of that, I thought he was really good on kickouts, both sides of the ball. I thought he was, as you mentioned there in that Down game, he was really, really aggressive. And there was times when Monaghan had a fairly good squeeze on Cavan, and he was able to be that outlet for that 50-50 ball. And I thought that was actually an area where Cavan did quite well in general. And it's interesting, I wonder, having a goalkeeper there in your management, as a main focus of your management, how much time has been spent on Cavan's kickouts. And I thought O'Rourke in nets was actually quite good as well. And, you know, he had a couple of iffy ones, but the wind really made a balls of the game. Let's call a spade, but I thought second half they Monaghan had a really high press, and I thought they manufactured a way around that press quite nicely. They got into little pockets, and he was, I thought O'Rourke was very composed. But back to Faulkner very briefly, I think he epitomised what Cavan were about yesterday. They were, like, I thought they were athletic. They were really proactive in everything they were doing. Do you know what it looked like? They were playing for a manager as well. Did you ever get a sense of a team that looked like they're bought in totally to what's happening? And I think Galligan has done a really good job, because that's a big role to take on. Like, it takes a huge amount of balls to go from being a player straight into management. And fair play to him, because I like the way he spoke yesterday about the game. You know, he didn't call out any kind of, like Paul Flynn said, he mentioned about a high press and all this kind of stuff, and he said, well, look, we had to sit in against the wind. You know, he didn't buy into any of the bullshit. He kind of called it as it was, and I thought Monaghan were really, really good, and Faulkner kind of epitomised that for me.
Yeah, I think Ryan, you know, Daniel talked about Ramey there. Ramey getting into his first stint as manager. You've gone into a bit of coaching yourself, Ryan. Like, you know what, and that first year, like, you know, it is that's a big role, you know, to take on a full manager's job in your first year. And the other thing too as well, and this is no indictment of goalkeepers, but it's very unusual to see a goalkeeper, you know, go into management. If you actually look around historically, even in soccer as well, like it's very unusual to actually see a goalkeeper go into management. I don't know what that is. I'd love to see what the statistics are on it. But certainly, Ryan, one thing that's probably helped Raimi Gallen in his first year is, one, what Led said there, he's a cabin man. He's given a lot of service to the county. You know, the players know him. The players obviously respect him as well. He knows the players. He's got a love for the players, a love for Cavan. And I think when players see that, Ryan, there's obviously, you know, there's a response to that. But he's also surrounded himself with some really good backroom team as well. He's the former Mayo trainer, Daniel, what do you call him?
Burke, isn't it?
Burke, sorry, yes, young Burke.
He's played at Ballymun Kickhams.
He's got Stevie O'Neill in as well, Ryan. You know, good S&C in the background. And that's all important. Like, and as a first year management, Ryan, you have to give him credit. Solid in Division 2, significant win, and you have to take your hats off to them.
Oh, definitely. It's, you know, you would think that wouldn't be an easy job, you know, because your teammates, you're probably friendly with a lot of guys. And then as a manager, it's not always going to be plain sailing. You're going to have to probably drop some fellas that maybe could be good friends of yours. You're going to have to maybe, I suppose, pull them up on things if they're not doing certain things the way you want them to do. But I suppose I noticed Faulkner, when he was interviewed after the game, he said that Galligan rang him and said that he was going to go for this job. Once it was, you know, they needed a new manager and Mickey Graham stepped down. So I'm pretty sure Faulkner was one of the key leaders in that group and well respected. And once Galligan probably was ringing him, he was able to get a feel if the players would have, I suppose, responded positively to that. So I think Galligan was probably in a good position going for that job. He knew that he had the backing of the players anyway. I suppose as well, a goalkeeper now is the most vital position on the game, or position on the field, lads, and they can see the whole game. And it's interesting. For me, Galligan has moved Faulkner from fullback to the halfback line, kind of around the middle third, as Dan pointed out there. And Brenton Rodgers has probably had a similar influence for Derry, where he has always been seen as a fullback for a number of years. And as soon as they got him out to midfield, I feel it's also transformed Derry's game as well. So Galligan, maybe he knows all them players inside out because he's played with them for years. And maybe him coming in, he was like, there is a few things I can change here that I've no doubt will make Cavan, you know, a stronger force come forward. So he's done a brilliant job, but I definitely think he knew where he stood before he even went for the job.
And that's interesting, Ryan, that you bring that up, Ledge. You're managing, you know, managing myself. I've been coaching a while now. And I always find, and I even see this at schools level, a young player gets pigeonholed into a certain position, right? So say, for example, oh, he's a left half back or he's a corner back. But you might see something different in a player. Like, and how important is that, Ledge? You know, because obviously the viewers and the listeners here are coming from a coaching background in a wide, diverse range of sports. But from a coaching eye, Daniel, how important is it that you actually, as Ryan talked about there, experiment, try things, give players a different role? You know, it's so important, isn't it? Like,
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is where your gameplay within training becomes really important, because if your training sessions are totally drill based, you're not getting to see players do different things. Like, so if you're playing a kind of more of an open condition game where you might have, there's part of it'll be defending, part of it'll be attacking, there could be fielding in it, there could be different aspects of the game, you get to see all your players in various different kind of guises. Like, so I think you see an awful lot, like as Ryan mentioned, you see like Rodgers coming out, Faulkner coming out, and even kind of players coming back. So look at Conor McCarthy popping back to the half back line. Like, yeah. For me at the moment, I think you get your ballers in the half back line. That's where I think, and you get two kind of fairly solid midfielders who'll hold the fort a little bit, and you give your half back line platform to attack. I think that's where if you want to get some of your better footballers, you bring them back out to that part of the world. And I think, again, there's probably that happened a little bit more when you were seeing more blankets and stuff like that, where you had forwards coming back out to influence the play. But I think it all comes back to training, because as you say, it's very hard to see that in just games, and maybe you don't want to experiment in league games and stuff like that. But I think certain, like, skill sets, especially middle third skill sets, you can spot things in players that you're like, he might have something that I need here in the half back line, and he's been wasting the full forward line. And whether that it could be conditioning, it could be an ability to pick a pass, it could be even, you see some forwards coming back and being really good defenders. Sometimes it's really good to know what your opposition is thinking. So if you're playing as a defender who's always played as a forward, you could nearly be a step ahead consistently, because you're thinking, this is where I'd run to for the next play, or whatever the case may be. So it's never have we seen more need for variety in how teams play. Like, you go to Dublin Derry last week, the numbers are irrelevant. You know, you have to have that broad skill set.
Yeah, the flexibility in the modern game, I suppose, Ryan, is huge. Like, and even the goalkeeping situation now, as we talked about, you know, how it's evolving as well. And, you know, I suppose as well, some players maybe just suit their back to goal, other players suit facing the play. And, you know, I suppose what you're looking for in a group of players is that real flexibility. Ryan, quick one for you. Talking about yesterday, Ledges mentioned about the conditions, the weather conditions. I played a club game there on Saturday night, actually, and it became a bit of a, I wouldn't say a farce, but gale force wind straight down the field. You're getting into the game, all your preparation nearly is out the window because you're playing a very specific way against it, and then you're playing a completely opposite way. You're sort of with it, and it's a bit of a lottery. You know, if you get a lead and you know, obviously you can pick the opposition off, and then when you're chasing a game, how important is the weather? For example, like if you're playing with the breeze, Ryan, do you think it's better to defend a lead or chase a lead? What's your view on it, like from a weather condition point of view?
Well, I think it's interesting you said that, Stephen, because the Leitrim game yesterday against Sligo, there was a massive breeze in Carrick and Shannon. I wasn't at the game, but Leitrim apparently won the toss and they decided to go against it. So they went in at halftime 9-1 down. Now in the second half, Sligo then outscored them anyway, 6-5, and Sligo were playing against the breeze. Personally, I think it's something that probably coaches don't talk about enough in training. You know, on a Thursday night, are they actually talking about the factor that the wind might have here, lads, if we win the toss, if we don't win it? Me being a player this last 10 to 15 years at county level, I haven't actually seen coaches focus too much on it, even though in Ireland, it's probably, there's a good chance the breeze will be a factor. Yeah. So as an underdog, I always like to take the breeze because I feel if it's a home venue especially, get ahead if you can, get the crowd behind you in the second half and try and, you know, take it down the home straight from there. I find if you go in as an underdog 9-1 down or whatever it was at halftime, it's a massive battle then for you to get ahead because the so-called higher level teams are able to control the game from there and pick you off and scores. They'll force you out and they'll get runners in behind. But it's very important. And yeah, I'm sure at the weekend there was a lot of matches. I'm not too sure with Wicklow and Westmeath was the breeze a factor because Wicklow seemed to build up a big lead in their game. And then they seemed to hold on to it from there.
Yeah, and it's important, Ledge. Like it is very easy, Ledge, to manage the game, and it becomes frustrating then for the opposition when they're chasing it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting point about being the underdog or being the team in control, you know, being the favorite, because it's sometimes when you're that team who chases and you can leave yourself exposed even when you have a wind, you know, if you have a team that's very used to these scenarios, that's comfortable to sit in, there's no expectation on that team to go and win the game. Sometimes the underdog can be very dangerous in that scenario, that they can hit you on the counter, whereas the favourites are expected to go and take the game, expected to go and be 4, 5, 6 points ahead, aren't expected to be patient and pick holes. You know, that can be tricky, and sometimes even managing players' expectations can be tricky. And you know what? That was something I liked about Cavan yesterday, and we talk about this an awful lot. They had zero ego about the way they played in the first half. They practically dropped off every kick out, and they had to, because in fairness, you're playing against Beggin, you're playing Beggin with a gale force wind, you have no option. But there was never any issues with that. And Galligan even mentioned after the game, he was talking about to stop the inclination of going too long, too direct, too early with the wind. And I thought that was really interesting. But that's because they were in touch at halftime. If Cavan were 7 or 8 points down, automatically the inclination is, it's almost in the back of your head, we're going to need a goal. And then that allows Monaghan to sit in a little bit more. Whereas Cavan were within, I think it was 2 points at halftime, and they were able to chip over the first two scores of the second half, and then it was game on. And I think it was very interesting the way he, like obviously the way they coached that at halftime was, stay doing almost what you're doing. So not letting the wind be a factor in how you play. Not like what worked for them was running the ball through the hands and running the ball fairly hard. There was no necessity for them to change that. And the wind just allowed that scoring zone to become a little bit wider. I thought it was a really good piece of management and really good insight, actually. That's what I really enjoyed about his interview afterwards. It was a really good insight to what they were chatting about at halftime.
Yeah. But sometimes that, as you say, Daniel, that's sort of swallow the ego, swallow the pride type thing. And a lot of teams now, Ryan, feel that you have to press every kick out. You have to go after every kick out. There's nearly a narrative in the media to say, you know, this. And I think that Down have probably fallen into that trap a wee bit too. But surely it's horses for courses, Ryan. Like, there's got to be opportunities in the game where, you know, you do drop off, you let the opposition have it. It gives you a foothold, but it also gives you a bit of a breather as well, that you can actually drop to the middle third. They'll probably play the game in front of you. And if they're playing the game in front of you and you're facing, not chasing, it's an easier game to manage, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think even with the weapon that Beggin has, you know, I think that was a smart approach regardless of a breeze. You know, because Beggin's constantly, sometimes you can give him a free man, but he'll still look to ping you 40 or 50 yards out over the top where they can get runners in behind. So, no, you got to play the conditions, but you also got to play the players that you're up against as well. And, Calvin going down to Clonus playing against the Breeze, it was vital that they didn't get caught with a long one from Began over the top.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see Mark's joined us there. Have we got you, Mark? Are you on? Don't know if he's unmuted yet or what. Just need to unmute you. Just click the unmute button there. It's not like you don't need to be quiet, boy.
Listen up.
Well, Dorney, we were singing your praises there just before you came on there, talking about yesterday. We were chatting about Calvin Monaghan, but obviously we have you on here, and we obviously know you're tight for time. But brilliant win for Wicklow yesterday. Ryan was mentioning the weather conditions as well. You can maybe talk to us a wee bit about the game, but from your perspective, from a coaching perspective, very, very pleasing result.
Yeah, it was a pleasing result. Looking, you probably, there's no doubt about it, probably learned a lot from Down, watching Down last week again, and just. We're able to go and get a good look at them, and look, it did definitely help a big bit. Probably it was set up well for a nice good ambush after they win Division 3 in the weather. Everything played into it, but look, probably the good feeling all week. Just training was good, and a few players back that never played any league football was a big.
Did Jackson play yesterday?
No, he didn't. Didn't play him, and to be fair, me and Oisin actually would make no bones about it. We're probably in disagreement over it, but look, it worked out well. Yeah. We didn't go home, just kept Shane's in there all league. So look,
Mark, from a coaching perspective, obviously we have a lot of coaches in the daily sport community. Be very keen to hear. A lot of our coaches are club coaches, maybe not exposed to the higher end of the game. From your perspective, like, what does a week look like leading into a championship game? You know, what does a training week look like? Just briefly, like, you know.
Briefly, well, I'll go back to last Saturday morning, trained last Saturday morning in Bray. It was trained for an hour and a half, and I have to say it was the best training session I've had with Wicklow all year. I make no bones about this year, probably because Jackson turned up, see his kick outs and stuff, but it brought Shane Doyle on it, because he had seen what Jackson was doing, and then plus with a couple of players who didn't play any league football back in. And it just, but the intensity was through the roof. That's the first time that I've been involved with them. Like, it was just 90 minutes, completely tough, hard work, just even like tackling stuff everybody hates, tackling grids and shooting. But even in the match, going through stuff and walk through stuff. And then Tuesday night, it was 55. Like, did plan me here an hour and 10, but it was that good. You know, when you get that sort of 55 minutes, end it. Keep it here then. Friday night was just a bit of a kick about, but I had a good feeling. I had a good feeling all week, just sitting a good. I wasn't like, would we win? I knew the performance. I knew Wicklow would give a big performance because we were in a good place. And well, on Friday it was just a quick kick about, and on a Sunday morning, just arriving at Port Leash, no wind, and it's a windy day and a bit of rain. But I just knew the players, I don't know, I just had a feeling they were in a good, good place. And I thought tactically, we did a lot of work done on Westmeath, and probably. Look, you know yourselves, week on week, you're doing tactical stuff in opponents, and it's very hard to do everything. If you're playing a league game on a Sunday and you have a game the following Saturday, it's very hard to cram things. And to be fair, I'll make no bones, the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks, we played Westmeath in the league. And look, to be fair, we didn't probably set up that great again Westmeath in the league, because we knew down the lane. What
element,
was coming.
Element of surprise, maybe.
Yes,
as well.
Didn't do stuff like, and the people just, we didn't like, or we never done that. You know this. I know you're not a fan of the box kick out and stuff, but the box kick out worked the treat for us.
Yeah, no, needs must too,
because,
you know?
We didn't, and we stopped actually doing that as last three or four league games, because this is element of surprise, as you said, it's element of surprise. And the same, I remember he come back to Clare last year, said Cork in a league game, was sort of wrote it off. Because we knew Clare was playing Cork first round a month, and a wee bit, not that we'd rip the game off again Westmeath, but we did know in the back of our head, we'll not just show our full.
Tony, you didn't have a brilliant league campaign. Waterford were the same, but you actually could see the emotion in the Waterford players and management. You could see the emotion in Wicklow yesterday. Like, how important is that championship win to Wicklow people, for example? Like, you know,
it's massive. And to be fair, look, you know, when you're not from the place and you're looking, I just looked, stood back after the game, and like, there's parents, the players coming over and supporters are, and there's tears in their eyes, and that's when you say, Jesus, this means a lot. And look, Wicklow, it was good for the group, because I tell you what, people don't realise this, there's Shane Doyle, goalkeeper, maybe 31, Dean Healy, 31, and then next thing there's about 10 of them, 21, there's 10 under 20s from last year, yeah. And there's 21, 22, they're very, very young.
So ideally, we've chatted about it on the show before. Ideally, what you would want from a Wicklow perspective, what Wicklow want is that group of players to commit to Wicklow for a good 7, 8, 9 years.
That's what they need. They need to commit to each other, be a good team to each other, commit to the S&C, commit to the conditioning. Because look, make no bones about this, condition level have a lot to do to get to. And I would just compare them to Slot Neil. I look at Slot, the conditioning level of Slot near the top, and that's, but they know that, and to be fair, I would say they will commit to hard, and to be fair to Oisín, Oisín took over them last year, and he did. He actually didn't tell me this to happen through the league, but they lost six players from last year. Andy Meyer, who was 22-21, injured. Paul McLaughlin, the full-back, went away. JP Hurley, midfielder. Then obviously Jackson going away. Podge O'Toole, their captain, hasn't kicked the ball yet in the league. Owen Darcy, their top forward, hasn't kicked the ball in the league. So they do. If they've everybody there, they're not as bad. But look, I say the results. I would say you said they had a good league. Look, Down only beat them by 3 in Aughrim. West East Sligo beat them by 2. In Sligo probably lost that game. We threw it away with a short kick out near the end, won the game. Westmeath beat them by 4. Probably the Athlone player game, they were really poor. Limerick, they beat. Probably should have beat Antrim. So they've been performing, but just haven't gotten the results.
They've been competitive.
And yesterday, and to be fair, yesterday, no doubt Westmeath maybe took the air of the ball. It was maybe gone, but still, Wicklow had
a significant win. Westmeath, there's some quality footballers. Ryan, I'm going to come to you in 1 second, but I want to ask Daniel this one because he's obviously, it's unique to Leinster. Like, Ledge, there's a lot of talk this week about the Leinster Championship being dead, and we know the damage that Dublin has done. I think 19 out of the last 20, I think it is at this stage. Yeah. 19 out of the last 20, I think 13, 14 in a row, whatever it is. But surely, Ledge, like, people outside of Leinster probably don't fully appreciate. You've had that feeling, Ledge, that Mark and Wicklow have had yesterday. Those massive championship wins, and Ledge, you'd have waited, I think, 7 years without a victory. I think it was from 2010 to 2017. We got that first victory. I was involved myself against Wexford. And just as Mark said, Ledge, I couldn't believe the emotion on the pitch that day. It was astonishing. Like, you know, they do mean a lot to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, kind of as a player, you have to, and even as a county, sometimes you have to separate yourself. You have to isolate the bigger picture from just the event. Like, sometimes it's just really fucking nice to win a game. Do you know what I mean? And it's not about structures or championship. It's just great to win a game. And when something comes off, something you're working on in training comes off, or whatever it might be, it's just nice to win a match. Like, I still think the provincials are, as a concept, in a grand scheme of things, they're out of touch where they're put at the moment. They should be the start of the year, but that's a different conversation. But like Waterford lads, the Wicklow lads, they'll be absolutely lapping that up because it's fantastic. And there's no point even thinking about the next game. There's no point thinking about tomorrow. It's just enjoy it for what it is. And it's probably as Mark and I talked about, the parents, you know, it's the families, the really close people that see what goes on year on year, they're the ones that really that really get enjoyment out of it. And I think it's perfectly okay to look at that and just sit back and say, yeah, go enjoy a couple of days, boys. That's class, you know?
Yeah. And Ryan, like, I was just going to come to you as well. Like, you've obviously had some great days as well in a Fermanagh jersey. Like, you know, you're getting into the championship every year, and probably Ulster is probably unique, Ryan, in that I think out of all the counties in Ulster over the last 15 years, I think it is, every single county has made an Ulster final at least. You know, I think there's maybe been 4 or 5 different winners. So it's not as dominant as maybe Dublin and Leinster, of course. Like, but even to win an Ulster Championship game, Ryan, in Brewster Park in front of your home crowd, your own people, like, special, isn't it? Like,
that's it, Stevie. That 2018 when we made the Ulster final, like, I'll remember them games forever, you know, and what exactly happened the first game. Obviously, the primary round against Armagh. There was actually quarterfinal, against Armagh in Brewster Park Saturday evening. 12-8, I could tell you everything about it, you know. Yeah. And then we went and beat Monaghan after then beating Tyrone in a semi-final down in Omagh, real hot day. Like, just the crowd, the scenes, as you said, the family, they realise the effort that you're putting in. And like, even there on Wednesday night, we played Mayo, Leitrim under 20s in a Connacht Championship, and we beat them by 5 points up in Ballinamore. And honestly, I never seen lads just celebrating. They were like 10 foot tall. Saying this was unreal, their best feeling ever, better feeling than even winning the club championship in the county. So what I would say is, it gives lads belief that all the commitment and the effort that they're putting in, it's, you know, it is possible. You will have glory days. So we're playing tomorrow night now against Sligo in the next round of that, but I've no doubt, hopefully, the lads beating Mayo last week, will bring them on another 5 to 10% because now they believe they belong at this level. Yeah. And like Wicklow doing that against Westmeath, Wicklow, you could see a serious improvement throughout the rest of the campaign from them now this year.
Yeah, I was going to come to that, Ryan, as well. Like, congratulations, a brilliant win for the under-20s. Like, to see Leitrim beating Mayo, at any level of football is huge for Leitrim and huge for Connacht as well, because it does give sort of green shoots from a Leitrim perspective. And you're enjoying the coaching role, Ryan, are you?
Really am, yeah, because I would say the Leitrim lads, in fairness, they're mad keen to learn and they're really eager. The one thing I just would have felt was they don't play schools football the same way you'd have St Michael's and Enniskillen playing Macquarie Cup against the Tyrones and the Derrys and the Armaghs. In Leitrim, these lads don't get exposed to that. So they probably deep down, they say they believe they can beat the Galways and the Mayos, but you don't actually know if they do. And by getting that result the other night, I'd just be hoping that would give them the belief that they realise how good they actually are, you know, and by us telling them that, they can now go and get a feel of it for themselves, that they belong at that stage.
Brilliant. And lads, I suppose, Ledge, I'll ask you this and then we'll go to you, Mark. Like, we're looking at Mayo. They went last night. I watched the game, actually. It was a hard watch now. Even the TV screen, I don't know what was the glow of the 3G pitch or something. It was very shiny or something. I couldn't really enjoy it. But it was a facile victory, Ledge, over in New York. I have to say now, I was over there 5 years ago. There's an enormous amount of work going on at development level in New York, Daniel. I have to give them hats off to them. The logistics. I remember chatting to Kieran Dealy actually about London as well, Daniel. You know, it's okay jumping in the car and going 20 minutes to training. Some of those lads are getting a tube across London, 90 minutes to training, maybe a bus, maybe a taxi. Same in New York as well. It's not easy to get boys together in that sort of city atmosphere. So I'm not taking anything away from what they're doing. I think what they're doing is fantastic. The work that's going on is brilliant. But I think Ledge has got to the stage now where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And I think with the level of conditioning, preparation, even tactically, Daniel, like those wins were quite facile for Galway and Mayo. And obviously New York had a famous win last year against Leitrim after extra time, and I will not take it away. But I think, Ledge, it is getting to the stage now where a championship win for these counties is going to be very rare, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's probably not even anything necessarily to do with New York or London. And I will say the logistics are incredibly tough for both of those counties. But I think it's more so a fact of a Division 1 playing a Division 4. And New York aren't even Division 4. I mean, I know the trip to New York and all that, there's a certain amount of expanding the game globally as well, which is no harm. But in general, like, you're seeing those blowouts between Division 1 and Division 4. It's not really what you're looking for. Like, in any other game this year, or this weekend was pretty much close enough, bar Carl and Wexford, obviously. But like Wicklow, Westmeath, 2 Division 3, you know, Tipperary, Waterford, they're both in the same spot in Division 4. Cavan and Monaghan would consider themselves quite close. So there wasn't any major blowouts. I just think it's a bit ridiculous having that Division 1 team playing a Division 4 team. And especially when a Division 4 team probably doesn't have the what they used to have, the 5 or 6 weeks of preparation to make a really hard plan to try and get themselves competitive, you know. So it wasn't really much benefit for Mayo last night, like, but look, that's what we're dealing with at the moment. And as long as we see Division 1s against Division 4s, you're going to get those kind of results.
And Tony, the championship has sort of crept up on us. You know, Daniel talked about the preparation time there. Like, it used to be the New York game used to kick the championship off, Mark. That first bank holiday weekend in May, that was the kickoff for the championship. It was actually only yesterday, you know, when you're actually sitting in the house, you're thinking about United and Liverpool playing on TV, and then you're going, geez, the championship starts today, you know, and you're looking at it and you're going, geez, there was a match last night, and you're looking at it and you're going, like, it's sort of just crept up. And it probably is, Tony, a little bit too condensed, isn't it? Like, you know, from a preparation point of view, like,
look, there's no doubt. Like, in Westmeath, to be fair, even though they were probably playing the league final yesterday, or sorry, last Saturday, and having to play in the championship a week later, and it probably is condensed. I do see it getting moved. I think the GA will have to move it. Maybe, look, we could put it back 2 weeks in August, put the Laren final 2 weeks in August, give everybody 2 weeks after the league final. I don't think that, because even realistically, it's like people say, but look, but there's only going to be, if we put it back 2 weeks, middle of August, 15th of August, or whatever, you're in this, only two teams is going to be in it anyway.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, the club, you know, so I do think that will change. But look, to be fair, players will tell you, maybe that's the only thing that maybe a week rings about. It's too close to the year, but players do want to play week in, week out. But I know just from and being a Wicklow perspective, and I even remember Claire, the 2 week gap was nice. It was nice build up. It gives you a good lead up and every team. Look, I'm probably a team, Westmeath, are probably punished winning Division 3 and then having to play a week later. Like, and the Welsh Derry in Dublin, didn't they play in Division 1? their break. So look, Westmeath probably feel a wee bit being punished, but look, I do think in the next year or so it will be fixed. Perhaps put the weekend, put the Iron Fiennes back to the middle of August.
Ryan, like I used to enjoy as a coach, like I used to enjoy that gap between the National League. You know, we had 4 or 5 weeks. We give the boys a week off. We go back to the clubs, whatever, go for a holiday, do whatever they have to do, a couple of days away. And then you come back and it was like nearly a wee mini pre-season again, build up the championship. And Jim McGuinness talked about it, Ryan, there during the week. We are taking a wee bit away from it, I think. You know, there was no preview really this week of the championship. There was no build up to it. It's just like, oh, the championship's on. And it's on your doorstep before you know it. And it's sort of devalued a little bit, hasn't it?
Every team has played 7 league games, you know, and they're more or less on every week. I know there's a break twice in the league, but give or take, you run off 7 league games in the space of 9 or 10 weeks. I do feel if you could leave a gap then, 2, maximum maybe 3 weeks to the championship, it probably gets people, you know, time to talk about the league campaign, and then it probably feels like it gives players a chance that maybe weren't getting playing throughout the league. Geez, I can go after it here in training now for the next 2 to 3 weeks to see if I can get in. Well, if you look at Westmeath, they won the league last week. More than likely, they're out the following week. He's going to play the same team. So guys that haven't probably got into the league team probably don't have a break or a three-week window of saying, this is my chance to impress the manager. But as a player, I feel it's great having games week on week. But definitely, if you win a league final up in Croke Park, it's a big ask to get yourself up to playing championship the following week, because you want to celebrate it. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Unless you're in Dublin and these teams that are leagues don't really mean that much. If you're playing Division 4, Division 3 football, you want to be able to say, yes, I mightn't get another chance here. Let's celebrate this for a day or two or whatever it is, and give us at least a 2-week break till we go get into the championship focus then.
Yeah. And Ledge, your own County Carlow suffered a pretty dismal defeat at the weekend. And I suppose, Daniel, it's probably an epitome of society in general. Like I seen during the week in the Irish Independent, Jordan Morrissey has left the panel to go travelling. Like Jordan was obviously, you know, a serious prospect, had toyed with the idea of going to Australia to play AFL. Great athlete, won a Sigerson from a DCU, an important player for Carlo Daniel. Like, and to see him going for a year travelling or whatever, or just, you know, leaving. Every young person's entitled to do with it all, but maybe it says a lot, Ledge, and we've chatted about this before in the show, that maybe players are fed up now too, thinking, what are we going to get out of it? Would there be an element of that maybe as well?
Yeah, and in fairness, Darragh Foley was injured as well. Like, and you're taking two of your most experienced players out of a team that, and I think they'd probably been papering over bigger cracks that are in Carlow at the moment. And I think we had a kind of a stop and look moment in 2014 when Meath beat us in the championship, and I think Meath were Division 1 at that time, but lost by 20 something points. And I think we got a bit of a wake up call then. This is probably worse for me because you're playing a Division 4 team that's at your level. What was the heartening thing about back in 2014 was there was maybe 10-15 players who hadn't committed for whatever reason. They all came back for the following few years and we had a little bit of success, like in context. But what's worrying now is we haven't had a competitive minor under 20 team in the guts of a decade. Our underage system seems to be falling to pieces. We've put a lot of resources into management teams and we're still in the same place. The club scene is quite a mess at the moment. Like there is no league. You've got a junior, intermediate, senior combined league. Players don't really have to train for it. So the championship is over and done with in 6 weeks. So there is no real emphasis for Carlow club players at the moment to do anything because it's a 6-week tournament they're playing. And I've seen my own club, I can see it at home. We're intermediate. I'm not sure lads would be overly concerned if they went down to junior. There's a handful of other clubs that would be kind of like that the football is almost becoming more social than a real desire to get to the top. I mean, you could say that about the senior side of things as well. Like, I mean, there's 2 or 3 clubs that maybe really want to win their senior championship. The rest of them are kind of in this quandary. It's going to be something needs to happen fairly rapidly with Carlow, or it's not going to be in a good place because cracks have been papered over for the last couple of years and there is nothing coming through. And it is a concerning position, and I don't think it's anything a one manager can fix as such. Yes, you could get a small bounce from someone coming in, putting 15 behind the ball, being really organised, and you could get a short term hit out of that, but for long term development, like as you always talk about the schools, Stevie, we that's where we need to start, you know.
Yeah, and Ledge, 23-point defeat. Like now they have to sit now to the 11th of May, 12th of May for the first Talisman Cup game. Like it's not a nice feeling that. you know.
No, and look, I think you could see from the outside, you see from the body language that there's a certain element of the wheels coming off. Like, this is fifth year of the program, and there's no, like, I think players see that there's no progress. And, you know, I don't think even a win in the Tailteann Cup is going to cover over those cracks. And probably, as you said, Jordan going off probably kind of highlights where a lot of the lads are at the moment. I'd say to kind of see the writing on the wall, and that's going to be a really long slog. And ultimately what will happen, and this is part of the vicious cycle, players will see, well, why not just go back to my club? I can go score a few points, be the best player, feel good about myself, maybe win a championship. Or do I slog around here for 6 weeks, probably get the bollocks run over me for 2 weeks, and then maybe go and lose a first round game to Antrim away in Antrim or whatever it is. And that's all part of the problem, you know. So yeah, Tailteann Cup is great and everything, but that's not going to solve any issues that are existing in Carlow, you know.
After playing for so long yourself, 12 years or whatever, or maybe more, and over 100 games, obviously you can hear the passion. It means a lot to you. And Tony, I suppose, looking at the results over the weekend, just quickly breeze over a couple of them. Meath kicked 3-19 against Longford. You know, obviously, you know, Meath have made steady progress, not probably where they want to be. I think Meath would have aspirations of being in Division 1, but that was a bit of a standout score, Mark, away to Longford, 3-19.
Yeah, big score, to be fair. Look, to be fair, I think Longford actually scored 3-12. Made a bit of a comeback, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But, look, Meath's going to be judged to play the Dubs next, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's going to be where Colin O'Rourke's going to... He'll be... That's where he's going to be measured at. And I think Colin made a speak when he first took the
Meath job. Who do you play yourselves, Mark?
Oh, play Kildare on Sunday. So, look,
I know it. Low block.
You have it that week now. It's a quick turnaround, but look, it is what it is. You'll take it. You'll take this Monday. But look, you know yourself, in sport, you'll have more good days, or you'll have more bad days and good days. So look, when the good days come, I think Dan already alluded to it, the good days come, celebrate them, because this time next week it could be a different story. But look, come back to me. I think me will be judged on how they fare against Dublin. I think Colin O'Rourke made a speak the first time he took the Meath job, and I thought it was very good. He says, look, this team has to be playing Dublin week in, week out, and how do we get that? It's getting to Division 1. They haven't got there, but look, they're playing them in the Leinster, and look, that's where Colin O'Rourke and Meath will be judged at, up against the Dubs.
Yeah. I suppose, Ryan, there's been, you know, obviously Mark's win against Westmeath was hugely significant. Probably the story of the weekend was Wicklow's famous win. Cavan beating Monaghan, you know, a local derby. You know, there's not a huge upset there, but there's some really mouthwatering ties coming up. Ryan, what's the standout game for you? Probably Derry Donegal.
Yeah, I think everyone was looking at that Derry Donegal from a long way out.
It's just going to be intriguing tactically, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and just, you know, McGuinness, you're just waiting for a master plan as well. Derry have won the league, so they're sitting up there to be taken down, and it just feels like. Personally, I still feel Derry are ahead of Donegal, but it just feels like McGuinness is rubbing his hands. I noticed even in Crow Park, maybe it was just the way the seating was, but all the Donegal players and management were directly behind the Derry the sideline. So in Croker, you know the management team stand on the sideline. The Donegal boys were within arm's reach of them, and it just felt like, did they decide to be there? Or
Psychology. Yeah. I heard a story about McGuinness at the weekend there that Dorney in 2013, I think James was the manager of Down, and there was like an Ulster Championship launch or something, Ryan, you know, and Donegal had won Ulster in 2012. They'd beaten Down in the final, and McGuinness came in and had the Anglo-Celt, and he just sat it down on the table in front of James and put his arm on James's shoulder, you know, I was talking to him, you know, with the Anglo-Celt in one hand and the arm, nearly like, I own you and I own this, you know. And he is a master of psychology, like, and surely, you know, Dorney, he's going to come with something different, isn't he? There's going to be an element of real intrigue around this game, like, you know.
It's the one game I can't wait to go to. I think it's like a Saturday week, isn't it? It's Celtic Park, like, and that's my age, the Ulster Championship, the flame will be lit. Because I know Tyrone, Monaghan, Armagh, Downs all sit and think, but the winners of that's going to take a lot of beating. I agree with Ryan. I think Derry are way out ahead, but I just think McGuinness will come with something. And I know I was talking about this last week. Mickey hasn't beat him. Mickey has never beat him in championship football.
There you go.
I know if you were being, I know Mickey Hart will never do this, but if I was Mickey Hart, I'd throw the game. Derry's won two Ulsters. Derry's won two Ulsters. I think if Derry want to win that Ireland, they need to get themselves right for other qualifiers.
What's your views on that? Like, surely, Ledge, I know we're not going to go into the fucking loophole of the provincials, you know, and the mismatch. Like, for example, there, Clare now play Waterford, right? Clare are going to be in Sam Maguire. Down hammered Clare a few weeks ago, and Down will probably miss out in Sam Maguire Ledge. So that's a story for another day. But Dorney did make a very interesting comment there. How much will that take out of Derry if they do go on to win Ulster Ledge? Having a battle with Donegal, battle with Tyrone, battle with Armagh, whoever happens to be, you know?
Now, in fairness, Doran is a master of throwing games in the league to get championship wins. Like, so look, I don't think Mickey Hart wouldn't be at his level now.
Mickey Hart won't do that. My point is, Derry have won two.
No, I see your point.
Two Ulster titles, right? Yeah. They're gonna get to the quarterfinal stage, and they're gonna be like, you know this yourself, up in Ulster, Stevie and Ryan.
Yeah.
They're battering each other. Like, and we come into the quarterfinal. You have Kerry sitting fresh. You have Dublin sitting fresh.
Yeah.
And they're just ready. Where Derry could go to Croke Park and just come through a complete minefield. We're coming up against a team sitting primed, ready. Look, Mickey Hart never ever do it, but I'm just making a point. Mm. Derry's won two Ulsters. Derry's season is now defined. They have to get to that Iron Final. They have to win an Iron. That's going to be progress.
I agree with the sentiment. Like, I really do, because Ulster is a quagmire. Like, what was it, 9 games for a team coming through Ulster they have to win an All-Ireland, like, which is outrageous when you look at it in the grand scale. You say, oh, Kerry can moonwalk through Munster. It's a really interesting balancing act, and I'd be curious. Like, I wonder, have Derry been kind of priming for this for a couple of years? I don't know, they've used that small panel for the previous couple of years with Gallagher, played a lot of league games, conditioning themselves to playing game on game on game on game. I wonder, is that the approach? Like, I obviously, as Mark said, there's no way Mickey Hart's thrown away in Ulster, and I think the players would be of that mindset either. The Ulster championships are hard won, like, but it does knock the bollocks out of you for later on in the year. It really does, and in an unfair sense, because as you say, you go to a couple other counties and it's cakewalk stuff. So, but look, that's the folly of the whole thing, isn't it?
And Ryan,
Derry's in Portugal. They're in Portugal at the minute, Derry.
Derry are in a training camp. Just goes to show you, but Ryan, you're probably the freshest member of the podcast panel here when it comes to playing. But like, from a playing perspective, we'll probably finish on this. Like, an Ulster championship game. Like, what? Just give the viewers or the listeners even an idea. Like, of like, what does it take out of you physically, mentally, as a player? Like, just training.
Yeah, it's probably the whole build up to it as well. You know, I have no doubt the Derry boys were thinking about this game even in the league. What I would say is Mickey Hart wouldn't even throw the McKenna Cup. Sure, Donegal played Derry in the McKenna Cup, and both teams knew they were going to meet each other in the Ulster. So I have no doubt. I can understand what Mark's saying, but I have no doubt Mickey Hart will be going full tilt to get one over on McGuinness. Interestingly, I mentioned there the Donegal boys sitting directly behind the Derry lads in Croker last weekend. When Dublin got the last goal to bring it to penalties, I think it was. Was it extra time or penalties? Dublin got the goal at the very end. You remember a high ball when Damon...
Extra time, penalties.
Whatever it was, Chrissy McCaig at that time was off injured. And he seen the Donegal lads jumping up and celebrating. He actually turned around and more or less said, you know, what the fuck are you fucking clapping or something? I just thought, right, this is going to add an extra wee bit of spice to it now. Yeah. A couple of times. So, no, it's massive. Like, you think of the man marking jobs that goes on. Like, it's just about trying to break your opponent. That's what it is. Derry will be doing matchups. Donegal will be doing matchups. And then once you get over a game like that, sometimes it could take you a week. Like, Mark's on about Derry out again this weekend. Getting over an Ulster game like that, where there's going to be so much hype about it, it could take you a week to 10 days to actually come back down again. So then they have to go and do it again in the next round against, they're going to play, who's it, Tyrone or Cavan?
Tyrone or Cavan.
Yeah, and then it's the same thing. It just keeps going. So by the time you get to an All-Ireland quarterfinal, mentally and physically, you're probably well worn out.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Great insight there, Ryan. You know, and listen, lads, thanks very much. And Dorney, good luck next week. It's mad that you're sort of out week on week. Like, it sort of doesn't even give you a chance to enjoy it. I'm sure maybe you went home and a cup of tea and a wee biscuit. And that.
Stevie, so,
yeah.
You know, I'm only 10 minutes from the Wicklow border at home, like in Carnew. And there was a video doing a WhatsApp group of a lad in the Dying Cow pub last night drinking pints of Smittix with a half down, half Wicklow jersey on. Do you know who that might have been? You asked him what the week of the game, what was the Sunday night after the game, like, Mark?
You can just see him there. He's only rolled out of bed there.
No comment.
No, fair play. And listen, lads, you know, that is important as well. You know, we're all engrossed in coaching. We're all engrossed in the madness of it, boy. And it is so important to really enjoy. I think, Dorney, you hit the nail on the head. The best advice you ever got off Brian MacGyver was six bottles after a match.
Get your sleep.
Lads, thanks a million. And look, we'll maybe see you next week, and there'll be more action to look at next week. Thanks again, lads. Thank you.
Good luck. Yeah, boys. Good luck.
All right, bye.